And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. It is December 24th, 358th day of the year. It's Christmas Eve. 7 days until the year is over with. Well, in 502, Chinese Emperor Zhao Yan names Zhao Tong his heir designate. When you do that, you're almost guaranteeing somebody's going to shoot you in the back. 640, Pope John IV is elected, 7 months after his predecessor died. 759, Tang Dynasty poet Du Fu departs for Chengdu, where he's hosted by fellow poet Pai Di. 820, Emperor Leo V is assassinated in the church of the Great Palace of Constantinople and is succeeded by Michael II. Not even being emperor guarantees long life. 1144, the capital of the Crusader county of Edessa falls to Imad ad-Din Zengi, the Atabeg of Mosul and Aleppo. There were several Crusader countries in the Holy Land. Edessa was one of them. 1294, Pope Boniface VIII is elected, replacing St. Celestine V, who had resigned. Even a saint gets tired of the crap. 1500, a joint Venetian-Spanish fleet captures the castle of St. George on the island of Cephalonia. 1737, the Marathas defeat the combined forces of the Mughal Empire, Rajputs of Jaipur, Nizam of Hyderabad, Nawab of Awadh, and Nawab of Bengal in the Battle of Bhopal. 1777, Kiritmati is also called Christmas Island, is discovered by James Cook. 1800, the plot of the Rue Saint-Nicaise fails to kill Napoleon Bonaparte. 1814, representatives of the UK and the United States signed a Treaty of Ghent, which ended the War of 1812. 1818, the first performance of Silent Night takes place in the Church of St. Nikolaus in Oberndorf, Austria. 1826, the eggnog riot at the United States Military Academy begins that night, wraps up the following morning. Now, for those that are not familiar with the famous eggnog riot, also known as the Grog Mutiny, was a riot that took place caused by a drunken Christmas Day party in the North Barracks of the Academy. 2 days prior to the incident, a large quantity of whiskey was smuggled into the Academy to make eggnog for the party. The riot eventually involved more than one-third of the cadets by the time it ended on Christmas morning. Subsequent investigation by Academy officials resulted in the implication of 70 cadets and the court-martialing of 20 of them and one enlisted soldier. Among those participants in the riot, though he wasn't court-martialed, was the future Confederate States President Jefferson Davis. Well, eggnog was considered kind of necessary for Christmas celebration. 1846, British acquired Labuan from the Sultanate of Brunei for Great Britain. 1865, Jonathan Shank and Barry Ownby formed the Ku Klux Klan. 1868, the Greek Presidential Guard is established as a royal escort by King George I. 1871, the opera Aida premieres in Cairo, Egypt. 1906, Reginald Fessenden transmits the first radio broadcast, consisting of a poetry reading, a violin solo, and a speech. 1913, the Italian Hall disaster in Calumet, Michigan results in the death of 73 Christmas party participants. 59 of them were children, when somebody falsely yells, "Fire!" 1914, World War I, the Christmas truce begins. 1918, the region of Međimurje is captured by the kingdom of the Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes from Hungary. 1920, Gabriel D'Annunzio surrendered the Italian regency of Canaro in the city of Fiume to Italian armed forces. 1924, Albania becomes a republic. 1929, assassination attempt on Argentine President Hippolyto Rigoyen. 1929, a foreign line fire breaks out in the west wing of the White House in Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, it was put out. 1939, World War II, Pope Pius XII makes a Christmas Eve appeal for peace. 1941, World War II, Kuching is conquered by Japanese. 1941, World War II, Benghazi in Libya is conquered by the British 8th Army. 1942, World War II, French monarchist Fernand Bonnier de la Capelle assassinates Vichy French Admiral François Darlin in Algiers, in Algeria. 1943, World War II. General Eisenhower is named Supreme Allied Commander for the invasion of Normandy. 1944, World War II. The Belgian troop ship Leopoldville is torpedoed and sank with the loss of 763 soldiers and 56 crew. 1945, five of nine children become missing after her home in Fayetteville, West Virginia is burned down. 1951, Libya becomes independent. Idris I is proclaimed king of Libya. 1952, the first flight of Britain's Handley Page Victor strategic bomber took place on this date. 1953, Tangawa disaster. New Zealand's North Island of Tangawa, a railway bridge is damaged by a lahar and collapses beneath a passenger train. 151 people die. 1964, Vietnam War. Viet Cong operatives bomb the Brinks Hotel in Saigon, South Vietnam, to demonstrate they can strike an American installation in the heavily guarded capital. 'S also known as the Brink Bachelor Officer's Quarters. Viet Cong bombed it the evening of December 24th. Two Viet Cong operatives detonated a car bomb underneath the hotel that housed U.S. Army officers. Two Americans were killed, an officer and an NCO. About 60 were injured. Viet Cong commanders had planned the venture with two objectives in mind. By striking an American installation in the center of the heavily guarded capital, they wanted to demonstrate their ability to strike in South Vietnam, should we decide to launch air raids against North Vietnam. And second, the bombing would demonstrate to the South Vietnamese that the Americans were vulnerable and couldn't be relied upon for protection. Well, it didn't quite have the widespread effect that they anticipated. 1964, Flying Tiger and Lion Flight 282 crashes after takeoff from San Francisco International Airport. Three people are killed. 1966, a Canadair CL-44 chartered by the U.S. military crashes into a small village in South Vietnam. 129 people are killed. 1968, Apollo program. The crew of Apollo 8 enters into orbit around the moon, becoming the first humans to do so. They performed 10 lunar orbits and broadcast live TV pictures. 1969, Nigerian troops capture Umuahia, the Biafran capital. 1971, Lancer Flight 508 struck by lightning and crashes in the Puerto Inca district of the Department of Huanuco in Peru. 91 people are killed. 1973, District of Columbia Home Rule Act is passed, allowing residents of Washington, D.C. to elect their own local government. 1974, Cyclone Tracy devastates Darwin, Australia. 1994, Air France Flight 8969 is hijacked on the ground at Houari Boumediene Airport in Algiers. Over the course of 3 days, three passengers are killed, as are all four terrorists. 1996, a Learjet 35 crashes into Smarts Mountain near Dorchester, New Hampshire. Both pilots on board are killed. 1997, the SID LN3 massacre in Algeria kills between 50 and 100 people. Now, Reuters said at least 80 were killed. The government said 48. La Jeune Independent says 117 and 11 abducted by terrorists. Okay, let's see what else we got. 1999, Indian Airlines flight 814 is hijacked in Indian airspace between Kathmandu, Nepal, and Delhi, India. Aircraft landed at Kandahar in Afghanistan. The incident ended December 31st with the release of 190 survivors. One passenger was killed. 2003, the Spanish police thwarted an attempt by ITA to detonate 50 kilograms of explosives at 3:55 p.m. inside Madrid's busy Chamartín Station. 2005, Chad-Sudan relations. Chad declares a state of war against Sudan following a December 18th attack on Idri, which left about 100 people dead. 2008, the Lord's Resistance Army, a Ugandan rebel group, begins a series of attacks against civilians in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. They massacred over 400. And in 2018, a helicopter crash kills Martha Erickson Alonso, the first female governor of Puebla, Mexico, and her husband Rafael Moreno Valerosas, former governor. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances: Christian Feast Day, Adela and Ermina, Paolo, Elisabetta, Sariola, Adam and Eve, Christmas Eve in Christianity. It's Aelfangadeskvoid in Iceland, the day when the 13th and last Yule lad arrives in town. Feast of the Seven Fishes in the Italian Americans. Juli Aften in Denmark, and Julaften in Norway, Julafton in Sweden, Natal Night in certain Orthodox Jewish denominations, Noche Buena in Spanish and Spanish-speaking countries, Decoration of Christian Peace in the old Great Square of Turku, that's Finland's official Christmas city, Wigilia in Poland. Kuvyiasukovitch, the Inuit, a new year in Alaska, Canada, Greenland, and Russia. In Libya, it's Independence Day. And in Russia, it's the Day of Military Honor, the Siege of Ishmael. And let's see what else we have. On this day in 1814, the U.S. and Great Britain signed the Treaty of Ghent, marking the decline of American dependence on Europe and stimulating a sense of U.S. nationalism. 2008, English playwright Harold Pinter, who achieved international renown, was awarded a 2005 Nobel Prize for Literature as one of the most complex and challenging post-World War II dramatists, dies at age of 78. 1997, Japanese actor Mifumi Toshiro, known internationally for his energetic and flamboyant portrayals of samurai, especially in films directed by Kurosawa Akira, died near Tokyo. 1979, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan to aid the Afghan communist government in its conflict with anti-communist Muslim guerrillas during the Afghan War. 1973, American writer Stephenie Meyer, author of the Twilight Saga, a series of vampire-themed novels for teenagers, was born. Now, let's see. 1905, American manufacturer, aviator, and film producer Howard Hughes was born. And let's see what else we might have. 563, the Byzantine church, Hagia Sophia, in Constantinople was dedicated for the second time after it was destroyed by earthquakes. 640, John IV begins his reign as Catholic Pope. 1046, Pope Clement II was elected. 1294, Cardinal Benedetto Giottani chosen as Pope Boniface VIII. 1476, 400 Burgundian soldiers freeze to death during the Siege of Nancy. 1515, Thomas Wolsey appointed Lord Chancellor of England. 1565, the compromise in the nobles in Habsburg Netherlands closes against the Inquisition. 1568, the uprising of Moriscos in Granada. 1593, a storm hits Texel. 40 ships are damaged and 500 folks are killed. 1651, Jan van Riebeck departs for the Cape of Good Hope. He is going to found the first permanent European settlement there. 1832, the first U.S. Negro hospital founded by whites is chartered in Savannah. 1832, the HMS Beagle anchors in the Wigwam Bay at Cape Receiver. 1849, the first great fire in San Francisco starts on the east side of the plaza. There were 7 great fires over the next 2 years. 1851, fire devastates U.S. Library of Congress in Washington, destroys 35,000 volumes. 1874, Pope Pius IX proclaims a jubilee for 1875. 1877, Thomas Edison files a patent for his phonograph. 1889, Daniel Stover and William Hance patent a bicycle with a back pedal brake. 1893, Henry Ford completes his first useful petrol gasoline fueled engine. 1895, George Vanderbilt opens the Biltmore Estate. That's the largest privately owned house in America. It's 178,926 square feet. It's in Asheville, North Carolina. 1900, the French Chamber of Deputies and Senate pass a bill calling for an end to agitation or prosecutions against those involved in the Dreyfus Affair. That had divided France since 1894. If you remember Dreyfus, who was a Jewish artillery officer in the French army, was accused of treason and convicted, and then it was determined that he wasn't guilty. 1900, the foreign powers present the Chinese Empress with their list of irrevocable conditions before their nations withdraw troops from China. 1901, private companies are allowed to use the word postcard in the U.S. Before that, they had to be labeled private mailing cards and also souvenir cards. 1904, German Southwest Africa abolishes slavery for young children. 1910, Luisa Tetrazzini sings to 250,000 people at Lotus Fountain in San Francisco. 1912, Irving Fisher patents an archiving system with index cards. 1914, German plane drops bombs on Dover, England. 1924, Albania becomes a republic. The ex-premier, Ahmed Zogoi's, led a coup that basically took it away from the king. 1924, the school at Bab Switch, Oklahoma catches fire. 36 people are killed. 1933, the Paris Express train derails. 160 are killed and over 300 are injured. 1936, the first radioactive isotope medicine is administered at Berkeley, California. 1937, the Dutch government recognizes the Italian king Emmanuel III as emperor of Abyssinia, which was Ethiopia. 1941, the first ships of Admiral Nagumo's Pearl Harbor fleet returns to Japan. 1942, the first powered flight of the V-1 buzz bomb took place at Peenemünde in Germany. 1946, U.S. General McNarney gives 800,000 minor Nazis amnesty. In 1946, the French Fourth Republic is founded. 1955, Arthur Aldous Huxley took LSD for the first time. 1 if you saw the movie about the Ricardos, 1956, the I Love Lucy Christmas show airs. It was one show never put into syndication. You have to wonder why. Well, on that note, we've ended our little history segment. I was asked if I would do a few more stories about ghosts and hauntings. It's one of my favorite topics. I've written a number of books that you can find if you go to Amazon. We're going to talk about the Tooele Hospital, also known as Asylum 49 in Tooele, Utah. Now, it was built in 1949, shut down in 2002. And before that hospital was built, that land housed the county poor farm. Now, quite often, it's not the structure itself that's haunted. It's the land upon which it sits. Now, while in operation, nurses recounted stories of moans and cries coming from empty delivery rooms. It happens so frequently, the nurses bought a television and put it near the delivery room door to drown out the phantom moans. It was believed that a spiritual portal existed there, and it's guarded by a nurse named Maria. Now, Tom Carr wrote a book called Talking to Yourself in the Dark that talks about his investigation at the hospital and a disturbing EVP, electronic voice phenomena, that said, kill your patient. He saw a nurse in a maternity ward caring for patients who were no longer there and believes the spirit of a little girl followed him home. Now, sometimes that does happen because ghosts can travel. Now, the location of the hospital is a little peculiar. On its right side, it's a cemetery. People frequently make obnoxious wisecracks about the hospital being a ghost factory because of its proximity to the cemetery. And when the building was bought by the current owners, they weren't even thinking about that. They bought it in 2006. The purpose was to build a Halloween haunted attraction. Of course, at the time they bought it, they didn't know what they were getting. Now, the owners don't believe anybody's trapped there. If they come across somebody who seems to be trapped, they get every religious head they can find to come help them move on. Says she wants spirits to come and go as they please and not have a location, sort of a spiritual jail, so to speak. Sometimes people have had experiences where the ghosts think they're doing something funny. Now, it may be funny to the ghost, but not to the people experiencing it. And then have later been captured on somebody's voice recorder saying you're sorry. Now, a lot of the reported phenomena is thought to be residual energy, such as babies crying or crawling on the floor over in the maternity wing. But there does seem to be a bit of intelligent interaction as well. One such intelligent spirit, a little girl, frequently frightens a staff working the haunted attraction by darting in and out from underneath the hospital beds. And of course, shadow people have been reported walking in the hallways. Most recently, a shadow-type entity has made itself known by bouncing around the walls in the maternity wing. There's a former patient by the name of Wesley who likes the room on the right at the end of the hall. Door shut on command. And the spirit of a woman has shown up from time to time, apparently, to visit her babies. Now, the room at the end of the labor and delivery hall on the left felt a little off to one investigator. So spoke up and said something to the owner, and she said several people have had that same reaction to the room. One thing they've got there that seems to be a little unique is a mirror gazing room. You got a room set up with a chair facing a mirror. And the mirror is slightly raised above where your reflection will be, so what you're seeing in the mirror is something else other than your own reflection. One psychic has said there are always two angels in that particular room. Now, the conference room in the middle of the hospital seems to be a hot spot for interacting with child spirits. You know you're in the right place when you see the toys other investigators have brought into the building. The emergency room side has a slightly creepier vibe, even in the daytime. The owner reported they're doing an extreme ghost hunting reenactment of a patient who died of a bullet wound, and people are having their K2 meters and flashlights riding up like crazy. They also captured an EVP that said, caught a bullet. And those who've listened to that EVP say it's very clear. Now, the spirit that's been known to show up on the ER side is known as the Guardian. Nobody seems to be really sure what he's up to, but he's an ominous shadow figure. Now, there's another paranormal experiment that was tried. It's called the human pendulum. There's a room in the ER where if you hold your arms out and ask the spirit to show you what yes is, it'll push you forward or backward. The opposite direction means no. And you communicate with the spirits in that particular way. Now, it was theorized that spirits may be able to move between heaven and earth. And certainly it's a fascinating theory that I haven't heard discussed much. Now, the owners had collected evidence over the years, and they got quite a number of very clear photos. One is of a little girl apparition thought to be named Emily standing outside the nursery and peering in from the hallway. There was a similar reenactment, I guess you could say, in a movie not too long ago. And, of course, something peering around a doorframe is unnerving, to say the least. Now, it's interesting to note that the hospital was a different investigation than others that were reported. While they were doing in the nursery doing a flashlight EVP session, the questions and answers led the investigators to believe they might have been communicating with an angel. And during the session, one investigator noticed a lot of shadowy movement right outside the room. Movement seemed to hover around the periphery of the room, but it really didn't come into it. The And from Utah, let's go to Mansfield Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. Now, construction began on the Ohio State Reformatory in 1886, but because of construction delays, the first group of inmates weren't able to be transferred from the Ohio Penitentiary until 1896. The whole idea of reformatory was new in that particular time frame. It was being built with the progressive philosophy of the late 19th century. It was hoped that reforming young men would be accomplished by segregating them from hardened criminals. The reformatory was to motivate the occupants to live fuller lives and motivate them to be better people as a whole. Now, you know, in theory, the idea is positive, but in actual practice, it's not, shall we say, a bell ringer. It's an admirable goal, but certainly one that was much harder to live up to than anybody anticipated. Reformatory was criticized as early as 1933 as being overcrowded. By 1978, a council was formed on behalf of the inmates by various churches and civic groups, and a lawsuit was filed citing constitutional rights violations. Reformatory was housing 2,200 inmates in a building designed to hold about 1,200. And the inmates were, according to the suit, were exposed to inhumane conditions. The lawsuit was actually resolved in 1983, and the prison was ordered to close by 1986. It actually closed down in 1990 because of various delays. Now, your first impression is it looks like a castle, not a prison. In fact, it had the nickname Dracula's Castle. Administration buildings are beautiful, and you can tell that the Preservation Society has worked hard to restore and maintain them. And you can spend hours wandering around the place during the day, and a lot of folks have what are referred to as self-guided tours. The location's got a lot of appeal for tourists in general because of its connection with the movie The Shawshank Redemption. Now, some areas are closed off on the day tour, including the sub-basement, the upper floors of solitary, and many of the catwalks and the cell blocks. Of course, when they run the ghost tours, they allow folks to have access to about 98% of the building. There were a few areas still blocked off, but not many. Now, one of the rooms where an investigator had a sense about during the daytime tour was up in dignitary housing on the third floor of the warden's quarters. You know you're in the right place because the blue walls and the stage in the area used to entertain guests. And it was an interesting story about this room. There was a chair in the middle of the room where that a spirit is very particular about. He doesn't mind a bit if a female sits in a chair, but if a man takes the seat, he gets very upset. Up in the old warden's quarters, there's a ghost named Helen who makes her presence known with the scent of her perfume. Now, when they went to do the ghost hunt, the owner, or the main, I guess, docent's probably a good term, talked about discussions had with owners of other famous haunted locations, and they're calling around and asking each other if they noticed an increase in activity of new people, ghost travelers, so to speak, as if something is stirring things up and spirits are moving around. And that seems to be the case. There was a 90-minute tour with the guide before investigators returned to loose and before they turned the lights off so you could wander around in the dark. It all begins in the Catholic chapel. At one time, people from town would attend church right along with the prisoners. And there's a lot of EVPs been recorded in the Catholic chapel. Now, the room above the chapel is the original hospital, which later became a tuberculosis ward. The number of folks have reported seeing strange shadows moving about the room. Now, when they do the ghost tour, it normally begins in the floor above the chapel. And the room was stiflingly hot. The guy told everybody to wait until the night cooled off the area before going upstairs, but investigators wanted to have some uninterrupted time, so they went early. And within a few minutes, I was settled in and focused on the end of the room. Moonlight was pouring in from the windows, so they weren't in complete darkness. And they could see the lights from the new prison that borders the property. And then the investigator saw something dart out of the last room on the left. It wasn't a typical black shadow person. It was more of a light shadow, a gray mist that moved across the room. Investigators went down to that last room on the left and found out it was a closet. So if what they were seeing was somebody's car lights, might have been a trick of the eye, but then again, it might have been a shadow person. You have to ask yourself what kind of light trick would make you think you saw something run out of a closet. They were also advised against provoking the spirits and were told it's best to keep things on an even keel. The investigators were told to keep in mind you're in a prison. But on the other hand, don't confine your ghost hunting just to prison. Before Mansfield was built, the land was used as a training ground for soldiers in the Civil War. And before that, it was the location of an Indian settlement. One of the guides said that he had been in weekly communication with a Civil War soldier. Now, solitary is considered one of the prison's most active areas for spirit activity. One guide shared a personal experience with the investigator, said he'd actually seen a bust of a male apparition in a cell in the solitary section. There was an infamous story of two inmates being forced to share a cell in solitary. Only one came out alive. The missing inmate was found stuffed under a bunk. So, are we talking murder? It was never determined. One of the great areas that was off limits during the day tour was the visitor's room upstairs in solitary. So the investigators decided this would be a perfect place to try a flashlight session. They set up their things, got situated on the side where the visitors would have been. Flashlights were sat down on the counter on the right side of the room. Immediately one lit up. And normally it's suspected that flashlights can be lit by spirits. And at one point, a gray mist materialized like the one seen in the chapel. Sort of like a shadow person, but lighter in color and not in the shape of an actual person, just kind of like a mist. And of course, they were able to light up a flashlight on request. Now, from the discussions that the investigators had with the spirits in this particular situation, they had the impression that in life, that particular spirit had been innocent. And he indicated through the light that he was stuck there, and others were stuck with him. And it was sad and terrible that an entity, through no fault of their own, might be stuck in a location for eternity. And there's nothing anybody could do except walk away and leave them there in peace. Well, to not find peace in death, but to be stuck somewhere, maybe that's what hell is. One popular theory that's been bandied about several times about prisoners is that they believe that if they die in prison, their souls will be trapped there. Now, you have to wonder, that's what they truly believe, or is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? If you believe you'd be trapped, then you are. If you believe in God and heaven, and that's what happens to you, is one theory. If you believe you're free to roam around wherever you want to, then you'll be free to do so. Do we create our own limits? And that's an interesting question. Found peace in life and developed a solid belief system, then that's what you're going to get in death, is the belief of many psychic investigators. Quite simply, if you're a lost soul in life, you're going to be a lost soul in death as well. And one of the EVPs, when they asked one of the spirits in the visitation room what his name was, he said Eugene Carter. Now, they were never able later to find out who Eugene Carter was or what he was incarcerated for, but if that's the identity, somewhere there's a record. Then there's the sub-basement. A female guide had a bad experience in the sub-basement. She thought as though somebody was invading her space, and she refused to go back down there. One of the investigators tried to explore that area, but encountered such a bad smell that couldn't stay more than a few seconds before they had to go back up into the fresh air. Two guards were killed by prisoners while they were on duty. Urban Wilford in 1926 and Frank Hanger in 1932. Now, Urban was 72 and was shot outside the West Gate during an unsuccessful escape attempt. And Frank Hanger was beaten with an iron bar during another escape attempt. Now, it was more common for the inmates, of course, to attack one another than it was the guards. And there have been over 200 known murders reported at this particular location. One of the investigators went and sat in one of the cells. And it was no stretch of the imagination to feel the walls closing in and pressing down. You feel like an animal in a cage. Well, when they got home, they played their tape recorders and found a very clear EVP of somebody answering one of the investigators' questions. All in all, it was, according to the investigators, public ghost hunt at the Mansfield Reformatory was very well run. The place is big enough to do it. There were a few stressful moments with people walking in and passing by, but nothing that ruined the night or got everybody too stressed out. Then in Moundsville, West Virginia, we have the West Virginia Penitentiary. Now, some of the nicknames given to this particular facility was Blood Alley and Hell on Earth. Department of Justice called it one of the bloodiest institutions in the U.S. It was established in July of 1866 and opened in 1867. It was designed to accommodate 840 men and 32 women. 1947, no. The women presence was ended and they were moved to another facility. But in the 1930s, it was extremely overcrowded, housing more than 2,700 inmates. That meant up to three inmates to be squeezed into a 5-by-7-foot cell. And by anybody's definition, that was close quarters. Now, in 1958, Warden Adams tried to make changes. He asked the Federal Bureau of Prisons for help. A representative went out and toured West Virginia Penitentiary. The representative told the warden, "I know of one thing that ought to be done. You ought to call in the Air Force and bomb the place off the face of the earth." Now, in the early days, there were a number of forms of torture used on the inmates. Whipping with the cat-o'-nine-tails, the kicking Jenny, and the shoe fly. Now, the kicking jenny was a device invented at that particular prison. The inmate was stripped naked and bent over the machine in such a way his legs were still standing up, but his chest was laid down across the apparatus. Both legs and hands were secured with ropes, and the prisoner was then beaten with a leather whip until he was almost dead. And the shoe fly was when somebody was placed in the stocks and blasted in the face with ice-cold water from a hose until the inmate was partly strangled. Now, in 1973, it was a riot, and it was supposed to have started when an inmate committed arson and injured some guards and two other inmates. For 24 hours, five of the guards were actually held prisoner. Prisoners submitted a list of 15 demands, 12 of which Governor Moore granted. One of the demands including removing 10 solitary confinement cells in the basement. During the riot, one inmate actually died. In the West Virginia Penitentiary, which was a book by Jonathan Clemens, it was stated that on New Year's Day, 1986, 16 officers called in sick, leaving only 31 to work the entire prison. According to procedure, the prisons should have been on lockdown because of the low number of employees, but it wasn't. As a result, during the dinner, 20 inmates armed themselves with knives and stormed the mess hall. Three inmates who were thought to be snitches were killed during the 42-hour riot. This time, the demands were related to poor living conditions, such as infestations of rats and cockroaches and maggot-infested food and sewage problems and poor medical care. Well, finally, in 1989, the prison conditions were deemed to constitute cruel and unusual punishment, and the West Virginia Penitentiary was closed for good in 1995. The death toll was documented at 998, but it's thought to be much higher. That 998 was the official death toll. Only 104 of the number were actually executed by the state of West Virginia. The other deaths were murders or suicides. Well, a ghost tour was organized, and they arrived early in the afternoon to take the day tour of the prison. Most of these facilities have public tours. The tour didn't take them into the administration building, which was extremely disappointing to the investigator since this was the beautiful castle-style structure. They were told there were plans to renovate that section of the building and turn it into a B&B, which would be interesting to see. The day tour also skipped the psych hospital, the sugar shack, and the basement. One thing they did do was put them on lockdown in Newall, a recently added section of the prison. One guard flipped the switch and stood back against the walls. The door secured the volunteer inmates in their cells. Once you're in, you don't get out. One family on the tour actually captured a shadow figure on video in the cafeteria right in the middle of the afternoon. The impression, even during the day, was how depressing the place was and how depressing it must have been for the prisoners. Now, the walls still have a distinct salty smell of sweat and just old mustiness. It's actually gross. Now, not everybody seemed to notice the odor, but those that did found it extremely depressing. Now, some of the former guards actually served as tour guides. One of the things they asked him was if there was any paranormal activity going on while the prison was still open. And he said guards would frequently report seeing someone walking in the yard only to have someone go out there and check on it and find nobody there. The tour that took place prior to the ghost hunt actually allowed them to go almost everywhere except in the areas that were closed off. While they were in the kitchen, their K2 meter lit up all the way to red several times. There was a lot of evidence that had been captured in there, both video and audio, and they knew that to be true because of the family's video, but they saw earlier in the day, and they knew about a famous photo of the shadow man had been captured standing by the door leading to the cafeteria. In fact, in the gift shop, there's a copy of that photo available. And Haunted History of West Virginia Penitentiary also has a detailed description by the woman that took the photo. The North Hall, called the most dangerous housing unit in the U.S. in the 1990s, where prisoners were locked down 23 hours a day. You might look at it as a prison within a prison. People never sent directly there. They were always sent there as punishment for acts perpetrated while in the prison. One of the most haunting images that still comes to mind is at the lone gun cage where one guard would sit and point his weapon at the cell block. He was ready to shoot at any given moment. Only the ground floor of North Hall was open for the tour. It was shown the old cell that housed Red Snyder, an inmate who was brutally stabbed by another inmate in 1996 while sitting in his cell. One former guard was on one paranormal show recounting a story of Red Snyder still greeting her when she walked by. They got to see the RD Wall basement room and the sugar shack on their tour. The RD Wall was tortured and murdered in the basement in 1979 for being perceived as a snitch. Inmates hate snitches. Sugar Shack was an indoor recreation room where inmates were unsupervised, and it was a virtual free-for-all in that particular room. That nickname came from all the sexual assaults and other sexual activity that went on down there. The room also has an infestation of bats. Then, in the psych ward, there was a solitary confinement cell room. And that room still has a presence. When they were doing their investigation, the investigator said as soon as they went in the room, things started happening. And one guard had reported hearing knocking coming from inside this solitary cell, even though there was nobody in it. You know, it's interesting that sometimes where someone dies, they remain in that area. And they can interact with living people. In this particular case, the investigator became rather combative and provoking with the spirit in this particular cell and sensed that they were talking to a murderer. And the murderer, it became clear, continued to refuse to face what he had done. And then there's the story of Jeff Atkinson, an inmate who was murdered on this block by other inmates because he killed a pregnant woman. I've also heard many times that pedophiles are targets in prison because inmates, there's a certain standard of behavior. And if you violate that standard, there will be repercussions. And then there's the cafeteria. One of the investigators said that being in the kitchen was frightening to her. Maybe all the old equipment still being around, as if the place had just shut down yesterday, contributed to the eerie atmosphere. Or maybe there's some bad entity that likes to hang around. The West Virginia Penitentiary had a bit of a different feel to it, according to one of the investigators. Maybe it's because of all the death that has occurred there. It's certainly a forbidding place. Their IR camera went on the fritz when they first started trying to communicate in the psych ward. It just froze up as soon as they started to make contact. Had to take the battery out to get it to shut down. And then after they put the battery back in, they weren't able to get it up and running. But they did have evidence that there was something there. You know, when I was in Tombstone, I went into the birdcage. And there was a stage and the boxes where you would sit. You know, those with money would sit and watch what was going on. I took a picture of the stage. And the camera, brand new camera, froze. It didn't click until I walked outside. And when I looked at it, there was a picture of one of the boxes showing an entity sitting in it, watching the stage. I went back in and confirmed that there was nobody there. But as long as I was in that room, that camera would not work. When any place else, in the building or in town, it worked beautifully. And certainly, when I wrote the book, The History and Mystery of Tombstone, I talked about a lot of haunted locations. There's also a poker table where there was a long-running poker game. And the owner of the building, at the time, back in the old West days, had minted his own coins that could be exchanged for favors and what have you. And if you have one of those, they're worth a tremendous amount of money. And there's only three or four still in existence. And as the owner was walking through one evening, there laying in the center of the poker table is one of those coins. Now, it's not something that a guest would have dropped off because it's worth, as I say, it's worth a tremendous amount of money. So he took it and put it in his safe. And he arranged to sell it. And when he went to get it out of the safe, it was gone. The safe hadn't been opened. Had no idea where it went. Well, later on, after the sale fell through, he went back for something and opened the safe, and there was the coin. Every time he tries to sell it, it vanishes out of the safe. So apparently it's home and wants to stay home. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. It is Christmas Eve. Hopefully Santa's good to all of you. Tomorrow is Christmas Day. So we shall see what 2022 brings us. We got one more week before this year is in the rearview mirror. So until our next show, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.